Okay, well, we're right on the top of the hour. This is Patrick Williams talking to you from Palm Coast, Florida, where rain is coming our way, but not as much as further north of me. So it sounds like we got a very good connection. We have muted all participants. And so welcome to the call. I'm going to be introducing our guests in just a moment. But excited to do these monthly forums that are information that can help you in your coaching business, give you some new ideas to stimulate new thinking, maybe dust off the rust a little bit and give you some new ideas. So today we're talking about something that really kind of comes from my former profession and our speaker's profession of psychotherapy. Way back when I did that, I used a lot of cognitive behavioral psychology and counseling. But today we have as our guest Claudina McMahon, all the way from London. Claudina, you want to say hi?
Hi, I'm delighted to be here. It's always a pleasure to speak to my cousins across the pond, so to speak.
It is indeed, and you're going to have a lot to share today. I know we have a lot of interest in this topic, and there was a great write-up about Claudina's approach to cognitive behavioral coaching. And I just want to say as way of an introduction that this is one of those areas where I like to make the statement that psychology doesn't own behavioral change anymore. A lot of these things came from, certain techniques came from psychology, but if you're not using it for healing, mental health work, then there's no harm in using techniques in executive coaching, business coaching, performance coaching, whatever you want to call it. And so that's what Claudina is here today, to talk about cognitive behavioral approaches to coaching that come from that theory in counseling but aren't used in a counseling format. So I'm going to turn it over to Claudina. You can say a little bit more about your background and how you came to this point. And then we'll just start on what is the CBC model of coaching.
Okay, thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome.
Yes. Well, my background, I have one of those interesting eclectic backgrounds, actually, where first of all, I started off in the performing arts, but I think my ambition outstripped my talent, and so I then moved into the psychology arena. And I started working as a psychologist and therapist after I'd done the appropriate training, etc. And did that work for many, many years. I mean, I started in 1976. So that is, it's my 40th year this year of
wow.
Practice. And so for many years, I was like yourself, Patrick, really. You know, I was a therapist. I worked with individuals. I worked within organizations. In the UK, we had something. It was like the precursor to coaching, but it was called counseling at work. And it was about, you know, helping people in the workplace, but using perhaps what would be more traditionally counseling orientated approaches.
So
in a way, that's how that led to me developing the coaching model, because what I found was that whilst some of the work I was doing in organizations so was very therapeutic, so for example, what we have something over here called death in service. So if somebody, for example, has a heart attack, dies on the premises, obviously that has a huge impact on people that are there, or if there is some trauma that may happen, whether that's a man-made trauma or a natural one, then obviously you need to be involved in that. And obviously, if you look at the statistics for anxiety and depression and those sorts of things, just because we go to work doesn't mean we don't take those conditions with us.
Right.
So I was doing a lot of work there, as well as with individuals. And I was lucky because I'd worked across the board in drugs, alcohol, mental health, etc., and then this workplace piece. So if I fast forward, I have always been someone, I guess, that has enjoyed innovation. And when I do my strength signature work with the lovely Martin Seligman, I actually come out very high on creativity. And so one of the things that was very easy for me to do working in organizations with what I would call a non-clinical population. That's just people like you and me. That's it. You know, we don't have any, you know, label. We don't have anything. Doesn't mean our lives are fabulous. It just means that we haven't got a psychological...
We're not exhibiting any extremes, we could say.
Exactly. Yeah, but it became evident that people were wanting to be better than they were. They wanted to be more successful.
Right.
Whatever that meant, okay? They wanted to be happier. They wanted to be more productive in their lives or communicate more effectively, etc. And so I found myself for quite a few years, because I was already a cognitive behavioral therapist, and I was lucky because not only was I doing the work, but I was also teaching at university, etc. So I was looking at CBT in many, many different ways. I found myself actually adapting it. And at first I didn't really notice it. I didn't really notice that that's what I was doing. And bear in mind that when I started, so my coaching work started in 1994. Now, so 76 for the therapy and 94 for the coaching. So I was in pretty early on in the development of coaching. And so in a way, there was a huge freedom there because there was a freedom to kind of try things out. And so that was the beginning of how I and three other colleagues went on to develop what's now an international model called cognitive behavioral coaching. Because what it is, and latterly working with, and I know you know Professor Stephen Parman, Professor Wendy Dryden, Michael Neenan and myself, we all work together. And so what went on to do was to look at how to take the skills. Let's not go into any deep psychology as such. Let's just say, let's look at these skills. And you said it beautifully at the beginning of this call that, you know, psychology is not now, you know, the domain of just, you know, the helping professions traditionally.
Right.
Because a lot of the skills we can use in a day-to-day way to help ourselves to be the best person we can be. So if you look at cognitive behavioral approaches, yes, it draws upon cognitive behavioral psychology, but it actually says, look, you know, every single day, everything we do is influenced by the way we think about who we are, what we're doing, our interactions with others, our behaviors, etc., the feelings that may or may not be self-enhancing, they could be self-defeating, for example, and that if we actually look at those, we can effect changes. We can learn a little bit like in the well-being arena, we learn about nutrition. So we start to learn that it's healthier to eat X than it is to eat Y, or that, you know, if we do, you know, our 10,000 steps a day as per the World Health Organization, if we do our 10,000 steps a day, that is the average for staying reasonably fit and active. So in a way, if we take that principle, it's no different with cognitive behavioral coaching. So we look at the ways in which an individual thinks. And we look at whether that thinking style is going to be self-enhancing or self-defeating. And then we look at what could be the alternatives and how to develop a healthier mindset. And then it becomes very practical because it can be used in all sorts of arenas. So, for example, you know, I'm what they call a transformational and behavioral change coach. And I work in organizations with a lot of CEOs and senior, very senior managers. They're all successful. However, they all have coaching. Why? Because we're still human at the end of the day. We might, you know, we still have our own packages. And if we can understand ourselves better, we can get more out of ourselves. And so, in a way, that's my job, which is to help people let's say, if I were to say to you executive presence and personal branding. Now, that doesn't mm-hmm. sound like psychology at all, does it? It sounds very practical.
No. Right. So a lot of what you're saying, and I want to preface something here, because you and I have had parallel paths without even knowing it. I mean, I got my doctorate in 1977 and started counseling and got my license in 1980. And then in 1990, I started doing executive coaching because I was a consulting psychologist. Back then, at least in the United States, and it sounds similar to the UK with counseling at work, they expected coaches to have some modicum of understanding of psychology because you had to screen clients to make sure they were, you know, not in need of some other services such as psychotherapy. So later on, we're going to get to a question about what about coaches who don't have that background and how can cognitive behavioral coaching fit into that. But I think the question I'd like you to move to now is, how does the CBC model work generally with clients, keeping in mind that the ICF definition is that we try to avoid giving advice, even though we know people are asking for our ideas from time to time. We try not to be prescriptive, and yet we have a lot of information that we can share within our relationship. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense, and I don't think that the way CBC operates would work outside of that, because it is about information. I mean, first of all, if we look at the process, there is always a first meeting. Now, in the UK, we call that, let's say it's within an organization, we call that a chemistry meeting. Now, a chemistry meeting, to see if we get on with each other, is about the coach finding out the client or coachee, because over here we interchange. We don't always talk about coachees, we talk about coaching clients.
Right.
So with that individual, it's around, you know, what is it they would like to achieve, who they are, where they are now, where they would like to be, what they perceive their barriers to be, etc. And the coach is there really facilitating that discussion. But obviously with the CBC in mind, is listening to the challenges of the individual, but within that CBC framework. So is this a perfectionist I have in front of me, as an example? If that's the case, is this perfectionism acting out in, say, the workplace? Because I'm going to keep it simple and just keep it focused on that for the moment.
Right.
You know, is that acting out in some way? So, for example, I work with a lot of incredibly talented, what we call technical specialists. And then one day, because they are so talented, they suddenly get told, oh, we're going to promote you and you're suddenly going to manage a team. And they've never had to manage a team.
Right.
And it's like, oh, heck. And then all of a sudden, I mean, I have one at the moment where all of a sudden this amazing woman that gets incredible write-ups from everybody in the organization is floundering because she's discovered she's too much of a people pleaser. She can't delegate well enough because she's constantly, her perfectionism gets in the way, etc. Now, although that, so we find out all these things in the assessment session. And as you say, Patrick, one of the important parts of that is also, is this person a coaching client or do they need a referral to a more therapeutic approach before they might be able to use the coaching approach?
Mm-hmm.
Or even, do they need a therapeutic approach and a coaching approach? Because for some people, it can work quite well together.
Yes, I agree.
So part of the coach's job in this assessment session is to really get a feel for the client, to build the rapport you need with the individual, to kind of maybe lay out with the client, because CBC is collaborative. And the way I would explain that is you, the client, are an expert on you. You have to live with yourself 24/7. So in that sense, you have that expertise. I have expertise, and together we share, we collaborate, and we put together the coaching program that's going to help you to achieve the things you would like to achieve. So, of course, there's also the contracting in that, of course, you know, so what can you expect from coaching? How does it operate? You know, confidentiality, all those aspects which are generic to any coaching approach. So that's there as well. But the CBC approach, right from day one, is very much around the collaboration, the setting of expectations of what, you know, what you can expect from me as a coach, what I can offer you as a to help you along the way. So once we've had that assessment session, as a coach, I have a pretty clear idea of what your challenges are. I may have even helped you, in fact, most of the time I have, even in that assessment session, to clarify for yourself some of the aspects. Mm-hmm. And we then put together what we call a behavioral contract. So a behavioral contract where we have the overarching objectives, okay, so an overarching objective might be to develop confidence within the management setting. That might be an objective, but then we have to put it into outcomes. So if you were more confident in a management setting, what would you be doing differently? How would you know that? How would others know that?
Right.
What would you be doing now that you're not doing, or maybe you're stopping doing that you are doing?
Yeah, which are great, powerful questions, by the way.
Yeah, and they really get people to think this one through, because it's all too easy, and I'm sure all of the people on the call know this, for people to make great generalizations, which sound great, but actually what the heck do they look like in reality? Because then once you've actually got the objectives with the associated outcomes, I see that very much as we now have the destination. This is the destination. Now all we've got to do is plan the route. Because some people want to fly, and some people want to fly and take a boat, and some people want to walk around or do whatever they want to do. So that's where the bespoke nature comes in. Because if we know our destination and what it is you, the client, want to achieve, and I as a coach feel, yeah, I can help this person with that, we can then plan how we're going to get there.
So, let me ask you a point here. I think I know the answer, but I want to hear your explanation. So cognitive behavioral coaching, not too different from somebody who's trained in positive psychology or NLP or other things, is like an operating system that the coach holds in the background, but it doesn't really show up in the session as a bunch of jargon and a bunch of techniques. So it's like an operating system that you work with, but you still use coaching framework in the conversation with the client. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think you've said it very eloquently. And that's absolutely right. You know, because I, as the coach who understands all this, have the operating system.
Right.
But when I'm
talking
to you, I'm having a human conversation.
Bingo.
And so that human conversation is about, as we all do effectively in coaching, adapting one's language to the client so that we get that rapport going. You know, finding out how the client operates. So, for example, some clients absolutely eat up materials. So we, in CBC, we call that biblio-coaching. So it's when people, so this idea of biblio-coaching, which is where you actually might, you know, there might be articles that would help the client or books that they might want to read in addition to, or materials that they might want to access, or websites like you mentioned Martin Seligman's. And actually there are wonderful, wonderful questionnaires, free for those who wish to use.
I've used them a lot.
Exactly. And so in that sense what happens is that the client may want that. Now some clients don't do that. Some clients prefer not to do that. And so that's what I mean about planning the journey, because you need to understand the learning style of the individual to put together a truly bespoke program for them. So I always say it's not your job to fit me. It's my job to get together the operating system, as you call it, to get together the operating system to make sure it actually suits and helps you.
Well said. Yeah, well said. You know, I thought of something, a statement you made earlier, I'm going to paraphrase, but you said the clients we work with in the workplace do bring their struggles from home to work. You know, we used to say to people, don't take your work home, leave your work at work. Well, people don't leave their home home either. They take their home to work. So if they've got struggles with their teenage daughter or their marriage or their health or something, it does show up in the workplace and it's going to impact things. So a good coach will have antenna that can watch for that, observe for that, and ask questions that will gain information about how is any of that stress, we'll call it, affecting the client in their work role or their living, their whole living.
Absolutely, Patrick. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's really important because what I have learned is that technical, and what I mean by technical is how to give a presentation, okay? The technical side of how do you put a PowerPoint mm-hmm. together and how many, you know, bullet points should you have on a slide and all that. That can be learned quickly. That's no more than 20%. 80% is you. 80% is your emotional intelligence in the workplace. 80% is how creative you are. 80% is how you use your energies. 80% is how you expand your abilities. But that's all about you. And that's why CBC works so well, because it works on the you. And what you find is if you work on the you, people will get the 20%. So you don't have to be an expert in, you know, whatever, in the 20%, but you need to help that person to know how to A, access that expertise if they haven't got it. Most of the time they've actually got it. What they can't do is use it because they themselves are getting in the way of what they know. You know, it's like that classic, Patrick. It's that classic which is goes like this. Could you please come and work with one of our senior managers? He has some time management challenges. He has been on 6 or 7 courses, and you know, we have actually done A, B, C, D, and E. This guy is an expert in every strategy there is on time management. Forget it. He doesn't need it. What is happening, if you sit and talk to him, will be that actually, because he's a perfectionist as an example, he can't work out what's good enough. So everything's weighted the same. So there comes a point where you have to make decisions and he can't make them. So it's got nothing to do. As I said, he could probably write the bestseller on time management strategies. But if he can't implement them because he himself is getting in the way, that is what is sabotaging his success.
That's a great story. So in coaching, using this model, if a coach doesn't have a psychological background or training in counseling, how does one begin to implement a model like this in coaching? How does it work?
Okay. Well, that is a very good question because obviously, you know, I was one of the first trainers in the UK via the Centre for Coaching with Professor Stephen Palmer to actually set up the first UK, and I think the first international training body for cognitive behavioural coaching. And it's very simple. We're not training people in psychology. We're training people in understanding the skills of how people think. So what helps you, what hinders you? So they could be as simple, okay, as cognitive distortions. So, you know, so if we look at what that means, it's a simple way of saying faulty thinking. And let's put it this way. If you can imagine me wearing a pair of sunglasses, let's imagine that I have an amazing pair of pink sunglasses. The only thing is, I don't know I'm wearing them because I just think the world's pink. In fact, I don't even know it's pink because I don't even know I'm wearing them. This is how the world looks. This is the color of the world. And then one day, okay, because somebody may say, let's just take a simple one. Let's call it mind reading. This idea that we make assumptions, we write scripts, we believe that, you know, we know what other people are thinking because we've assumed all this stuff. And this is my pink pair of sunglasses. And then one day we start talking about assumptions. That's not a psychology thing. I'm sure people on here talk about assumptions with their coaching clients. And then one day that person takes off these pink sunglasses and they're like, whoa, this is different. Because now they realize, one, they were wearing sunglasses, two, what color those sunglasses were, and three, if they take them off, how the world looks differently. Now, none of that is psychology. It is based in it, you could say, in terms of, you know, how it was first developed. But actually, we're talking about these distortions. And so I have to say to my clients, you know, if we have many colored pairs of sunglasses that we're swapping all the time, we're actually distorting the way we see our world. So, you know, when you say simple things, you know, I mean, I think a lot of coaches do this all the time. So you say, how might you know that? And they look at you as if you're mad. Because nobody's ever said, how might you know that? And they go, oh. And they can't answer it.
Yeah.
Because once you can't answer something, it's got to tell you that, maybe I don't have a rationale for this. Maybe I just kind of package stuff together. So, for example, if we look at these distortions, so when we're training coaches, once we've got all our basic stuff out of the way, and what I mean by that is the obvious things like the contracting and, you know, and the listening and the whole sort of piece on that that you would need to do, what we start to do is to help them develop what we call a cognitive ear. And the cognitive ear is once you understand how, for example, people's belief systems are put together, how people set up rules that they live their life by, even though they don't know they've got them, how they have distortions, then because it's collaborative, you're listening to the story of the individual and you then come back using Socratic questioning. Okay, so I'm getting the client to think about what they're saying, but in your head, because of the operating system, you're getting them to uncover their own way or their own unique way of putting together the way they see the world. So they're questioning themselves. And then, of course, you have alternatives, because if I've now taken off my pink sunglasses, and I'm looking around, how do I operate in this new world? What can I do? You know, so it can be simple things, and they all are practical because they're all about, you know, maybe it's just a case now that I need to communicate more effectively. Well, okay, that's fabulous. So because at the moment I've been working on the fact that everybody should know what I think, and I suddenly realized that's what I think, that everyone should know, and no wonder I'm having problems with people because they don't know, and then I get cross with them. So now I know I need to communicate. So number two, so what does that actually mean? What does communication look like? How do you sit down with someone and work it through with them? How do you help them to, you know, understand where you're coming from? So if I take another example there, I'm working, because I do a lot of international work over Skype, et cetera. And, you know, I've got a fantastic head of law firm, an international law firm over in Singapore. And she is a lovely, amazingly talented lady. However, she was really surprised that she thought she was being the most supportive manager and couldn't understand why everyone was terrified of her. And because she said, I'm only trying to help them. I'm only trying to make them better. I only want to help them develop their career. And then once she realized that actually the whole because she was so focused, she wasn't spending time in her communications to find out what people did know, where they might have a few blocks, how she could help them, how she could coach them, if you like, to become, we have a term over here, I'm sure you've got it, the coaching manager. So it's the manager who uses the coaching skills idea to help develop their own staff within an organization. They're not a coach, but again, they use some of the skills. And so, you know, once she started to do that, but then she had to deal with her own frustration because it takes longer. It's so much easier to tell someone what to do. We all know that, you know, just do this. But if you're actually then sitting down with them and finding out what they do know, how they might approach that, what they think their first steps are, you know, then you have to set up, obviously, once they've done that, you might need to help them with that a little bit because you are the manager. You're not the coach. You might use some of these skills, but you are a manager. And then they go off, and then you have to kind of look at how they come and report back, so that eventually, you know, what you're doing is you're developing that person. So they are learning, and then they won't need to come back to you. But of course, right. In the early days, there is more input early on while that's happening. So she then had to deal with her frustrations because, you know, I mean, you're at work to get work done, you know. So she was really getting herself into a state. She wanted to be helpful. She thought she had been, but she hadn't been. Then when she discovered she hadn't been, she wanted to be, learnt the skills, and then found herself dead frustrated because you know, she's this classic type A person, you know, high energy, high out there, doing everything. And she has had to learn how to manage her own emotions, which, again, CBC does really well.
Yes, and the beautiful way you're describing this, I have to say, Gladina, is so well done, because the value of coaching is that it's not a one-trick pony. People don't come for one session and feel like their life has changed. They come back with information that they noticed or gained or observed in their week to come, and a good coach can then know what questions to ask or help them learn more about themselves. Like Tim Galloway always says, coaching is learning what you're learning while you're learning it. But this cognitive behavioral coaching, I love the way it takes sound clinical evidential research and brings it to a coaching model. And many of our listeners may not know, if you've been around coaching long enough and you've looked at what the ICF posts as research and all the things that are always looked at, Tony Grant's name from Australia comes up, and of course he's good friends with Stephen Palmer and others in the UK. And when he did his early research on coaching and making distinctions, he used a cognitive behavioral approach. That's really what he was looking at, is differentiating coaching from counseling. So you've kind of tapped into the early days of theory that is about human change, which is we're all involved in. And I'd like you to say a little bit about, now that you teach that to coaches, you do have a course at ILCT, I think, from time to time. Can you talk about that, when the next one might be, and how that's done?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was delighted that, you know, ILCT wanted to take this on board and to actually sort of put out an offering. And so obviously, you know, those that are interested in that, I mean, what it does is it gives you an overview of what cognitive behavioral coaching is. It gives you the, if you like, the basic skills that you don't have to be a psychologist to use. You know, there's no need to be frightened that, oh, I'm overstepping the boundaries here, etc. These are practical skills, and therefore they can be integrated into any coaching model as well, because that's what people do as well. Even if they don't want to be cognitive behavioral coaches as such, they go, but I really like that, and that, and I'll put that into what I'm doing already. And so there are then a sort of set of skills that you can develop, ways of helping the client, ways of assessing, etc. You know, the behavioral contracting idea, the way that we distort our world, the way we can challenge ourselves, you know, so those kind of aspects of how do we help clients to challenge themselves. And because it's collaborative, it also is about the part for the client is they're responsible for their own homework. So the assignments that come up during the session, you know, because I mentioned the assessment session, but I didn't mention the structuring, for example, of ongoing sessions.
Right.
So what happens there is, out of what you are discussing, which is related back to the outcome, you then develop what the homework or the assignments are going to be between now and the next time we meet. And so, as you're saying, Patrick, you know, what you then do is you're able to, like, when you meet the client again, you're able to look at where they are, what they've managed to achieve, what they could have done differently, where their stumbling blocks are, etc. And so you continuously move through. So the course itself gives an opportunity to look at that and all the things that I'm talking about, in you know, et cetera. So it's a course I think that would help people if they sort of are interested in this and think, yes, you know, I would like to kind of find alternative or additional ways of helping people to change their thinking. And it's not just your thinking, it's your behaviors. You know,
right.
So for example, whether that's body language, let me give you an example there, networking. Now, I don't know about you guys over the pond, but over here, there are some people would rather pull their own teeth out than go to a networking event. They hate it. They don't like it. They don't like going to the groups. They don't like this idea that they've got to network with people. You know, they feel anxious because they're internally focused. That's where anxiety comes from. You're constantly thinking about yourself. I'm going to be boring. I don't know what to say. It's going to be embarrassing. Whatever. It's all internally focused, not externally focused. And mm-hmm. So, give you an HR, I was working with the director of HR, in fact, the global director, which was interesting, for a big company in HR. And this guy, hugely successful, but he said, I will do anything to get out of networking. Now, you're a successful man that's gone up the corporate ladder, but he said, I'll do anything rather than go. I'll delegate it on the grounds that I'm training my staff. You know, yeah. But he said, I have to do some of it. He said, but I do as little of it as possible. Now, in CBC, what we were able to do is I developed some models, because CBC is a model-driven, to a degree, approach. So I developed something called the open model, which gives people structure to hang on to so they feel safe, but freedom to, if you like, develop their own style. So if I give you an example there of open, open stands for, the O stands for occupation. So when you're with a group of people, you know, what do people do and where do they work and how did they get into it and, you know, where were they before? All this sort of stuff around work, what attracted them, et cetera, to their particular role. Okay, P is personal. So if someone says, oh, I've just got back from skiing, what do you know about them? Well, they've gone skiing. Okay, so that is your whole conversation piece about skiing, because maybe you have been skiing, maybe you haven't been skiing, but whether you have or you haven't, you've got a whole conversation about skiing there. E is environment. So environment can be where we are now. So, you know, if for example, we were, if I was in your beautiful country, then, you know, that to me is something which would be so exciting. So I could be talking to you and finding out about whichever state you happen to be in and that sort of thing. And again, it's nothing to do with me. It's all about you, isn't it? So environment can be that. Type of aspect, or where someone lives. You know, here we have people who live in on what we call houseboats, and they can be really luxurious, but they're moored in rivers and places like that, so that's an unusual thing. And then N is non-work activity, so that's hobbies. So if you've got colleagues at work, and we call it football, you call it soccer, you know,
right.
So on a Monday morning, you know, maybe as a manager, because you know that some of your team absolutely love football or soccer, you say, how did your team do at the weekend? Now, you've got a lot of information there. You've got a structure of different things. When you go into a networking event, it's about then using that structure together with open questions. So people learn that what, where, how, why, when. And again, it's all externally focused. So I'm interested in you. I'm interested in who you are, etc. Because that's how relationships form. And then in return, let's be fair, you're going to ask me questions. Now, that means I don't have to be internally focused. I can be externally focused on you. You will then, because it's polite and it's what we do as human beings, will ask me questions. We then have a dialogue going. Now, I use that model, okay, with him, and yeah, I can trace it all back, you know, like, you know, if you wanted to look at it in terms of where it all came from originally and how I put it together. But the point is, it's practical. And this guy, after our coaching program, there were a number of other things obviously on it, he said, you know, it's easy peasy, it's so simple. I said, yeah, because you're not worrying about you all the time. And then he really, really said, for the first time in his career, you know, when networking things were coming up and that sort of stuff and conferences that he had to go to, then, you know, he was feeling comfortable. And so CBC does that quite a lot. It actually targets what seems very practical, like networking, but looks at it from the point of view of what gets in the way, which is the person. Then how can they use some sort of structure to help them? Then they go practice it. And of course, as we know, change comes in four stages. And so whether you're learning to type, for example, a keyboard, or whether it's behavioral change or learning to, you know, drive a car, it's the same process. You know, first of all, it's the unconsciously incompetent, don't know it, can't do it. So you just keep doing what you're doing in the hope something will happen, but of course it doesn't. Then you become consciously incompetent because you become aware, oh, now I see what I'm doing. I'm still doing it, mm-hmm. but I can kind mm-hmm. of get awareness. Then you do the consciously competent, in other words, let me plan, what strategies can I use, how, what might I do this? You do it, but you have to think about it. And then if you do it often enough, you become unconsciously competent because it's automatic behavior.
Yeah, that's a great model. And I think, I mean, wow, what a fire hose of information we have here that I know people are going to listen to this and maybe have to re-listen to this since we're recording it. But I want to say a couple things here. One is we have one of our faculty, Deanna Nagel, who has developed a course using your textbook that you wrote with Professor Palmer, Cognitive Behavioral Coaching. And so we do have a class at ILCT on occasion on this. And then you might also tell people your website, because I know there's a lot of resources and articles in your blog and things like that if they want to stay in touch and keep learning from you.
Oh, that, well, I mean, yes, I'd be delighted if anybody would like to look at my website. And I am delighted that you guys have taken that on. Deanna, you know, has developed that because, you know, and I think what people will find if they choose to have a look at it is that they'll see it's an incredibly practical. To me, it has to be practical. It has to be something that's safe to use. Yes, it's based on, if you like, research, etc., but it's dead practical. And right. If they want to, I'd be delighted if you would visit cognitivebehavioralcoachingworks.com. That's cognitivebehavioralcoachingworks.com. I also have my own personal website.
Yeah, right.
Yes. I also have my own personal website, which is GladinaMcMahon.com.
Yeah, great. So you guys, we'll have that information also in the email that will come out to people. But we have a few minutes left. Let's take a chance and see if somebody who's hung around to listen to all this information has a live question. If you'd take a... Yeah, great. So we're in Q&A. If somebody has a question they wanted to ask Gladina, we seem to have a nice quiet line, so go ahead.
If you'd like to ask a question, you can press star 6.
Oh, thank you. You were still muted, so those of you trying to tell us. Yeah, if you have a question, push star 6 so we can hear your question. Thank you.
Yes, this is Nancy. I'm curious, in an organizational setting when you're working with a new team, and you have multiple people with multiple classes, as you call them, do you have any framework or suggestions on how to help them navigate that conversation of creating goals?
Gladina, were you able to hear that question?
Oh. Hello? Yeah.
Were you able to hear? There we go. Okay.
I was. It was a fabulous question, by the way. Because when you're working in an organization, you may be working with a team, and therefore everyone brings their own uniqueness to that team. Now, I think that this is where coaching supplements our activities. So, for example, you may have a team building part. In the UK, we have in our human resources something called learning and development. So very often what will happen with very new teams is learning and development will do some team building around using psychometrics, for example, looking at how teams operate, looking at, so that's the technical side, as I would call it, although it's kind of quasi-personal, but, you know, sort of, what are our ground rules as a team? How do we want to run this team? You know, how do we structure it, etc. And then what happens is the coaching comes in. And the coaching comes in helping people to perhaps, A, understand their psychometric feedback. So what does that mean about them? What does that mean as a team? So you're together as a team. And therefore, you know, where, how can they all use their unique strengths to, for the benefit of the team, and how do they develop the ability, which is key to teams, and therefore it's key to the individual makeup of people, to have what we call robust conversations. Because good teams don't agree, okay? Good teams, that's the whole point of a team, is that the whole point is difference. The whole point is that you have people who are different and you want to get that difference to work to the best of whatever you're trying to achieve. Inevitably, that's about how you communicate. So then we look at the communication. Now, that might mean that some coaching is individual. So some people are struggling with stuff. They have individual sessions. Or, depending, it can be and or. So some might have individual sessions to look at, you know, how they get their points across and what's stopping them from doing that. And then also you might have a team coaching session, which is identifying the collective, if you like, the collective process within the team and what it actually means to be a member of that team. So you would take some of these concepts and actually sort of get people to do, say, for example, I've done this myself. I've sat in on a team meeting. So I've watched how the team are operating. I've watched people's body language. I've watched all sorts of things, but within the CBC framework. So, of course, my operating system and is going, and I'm looking at how people are relating to each other and what messages they're giving each other, and did they mean to give them that message, actually, because it might look like X to them, but it could be Y to someone else. And so, therefore, what you do is you're then working with that to look at how that team might operate. So individual work, collective work, working within a structure, within a learning and development framework that will bring in other aspects like training, and that is a good way of really getting teams to be cohesive.
Great. Thank you very much. Anybody else, if you have a question, push *6 so we can hear you, and go ahead. Well,
sorry,
I know we have.
Oh,
here we go. There we go. Okay.
And so I answered my own question listening, so I don't have a follow-up.
Oh, great. And I will say to everybody, we had about 20 people send in questions that Amy gave to me, and I think we've covered all of them. So if you did submit a question, we've covered the topics, and I want to really say that I love the fact that we're connected through Stephen Palmer. I mean, you may know that I'm an honorary vice president of the International Association of Coaching Psychology, and that's another whole, you know, label. I mean, coaching psychology, when I've spoken at their conferences, it's not psychology. It's not training to be a psychotherapist. It's training to use techniques from the research in psychology in a coaching format. So I think it's all part of the evolution of our profession, and I'm thrilled to have this information available to our students, and I wonder if you have any final words that you'd like to say, Glendina.
Pat, before you go, I think we do have one more question.
Oh, okay, one more question.
Joan?
Oh, I don't have a question.
Oh, okay. Okay, never mind.
All right, so great. So the questions were answered before. So this is psychic coaching. See, we answered the questions without knowing what they were. So Glendina, do you have any final words you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Yeah, I think I suppose what I would like to leave you with is just this thought that, you know, at the end of the day, we are all fallible human beings. That's a big concept in CBC, the fallible human being concept. None of us walk on water. All of us will sink. But it's about saying that once you accept that you are a fallible human being, the irony of that is you become more successful, because what you do is you will take more risks. Yes, you think them through, of course. You know, you don't jump out of the plane without a parachute. So, but you kind of take more risks. This concept, again, and we have a lot, we haven't had time to cover them, concepts like the fallible human being, concepts like special person syndrome, you know, concepts that you can use with your clients to really help them to be the best they can be. And at the end of the day, my motto in life is, we only get one shot at this, so why not make it the best shot ever?
Beautifully said, brilliant. So I think, as she said, Gladina said, we've only really scratched the surface of a very vital subject, but one that is not unreachable or unattainable. I know Gladina's written a couple books on this. You can find her name at Amazon, as I did, and on her website. We've got a class coming up, but if anybody is really drawn to this, I want to just tell you, I think I endorse cognitive behavioral coaching as one of the greatest transitions to take the theories of psychology into the practical of coaching. And I think it's well done and has stood the test of time and research, and you'd be well served, and your clients would be well served to look into it. So, Gladina, thank you for this in-depth conversation, at least a little bit of depth with a lot more to come across the pond, as you say, and I look forward to learning more about you.
Oh, well, thank you so much for asking me, and thank you for those of you that have taken the time to listen to me today. It's been a real pleasure, so thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Have a good rest of the night.
And you too.
Okay, bye.